The following talk is offered freely to ensure that no one is ever denied access to these practices and to these teachings. If you feel inspired to make a donation to support this offering, you can go to my website at jonathanfaust.com. While you're there, you can also sign up for a monthly newsletter designed to support you in your practice. Thank you and enjoy.
So a bunch of elementary school kids, second and third graders, were on a field trip. And the bus driver of the school bus was kind of motoring along, and one of the little girls came up to him and said, Mr. Clancy, we weren't sure you had lunch, and we thought you might like some peanuts. So he kind of held out his hand, and she put some peanuts in his hand. He said, well, thank you. That's so kind. And a little bit later, another one of the girls came up and said, Mr. Clancy, would you like some more peanuts? And he said, well, sure, thank you. That's so sweet of you. And he took the peanuts. And a little further down the road, another little girl came up and said, Mr. Clancy, would you like some peanuts? And he goes, well, thank you, but don't you like peanuts? And she said, not really. We just like to suck the chocolate off them. So we're talking about the heart practices these weeks, and sometimes it looks a little different than what the intention is. I'd like to talk a little bit tonight about compassion, which is the second of the four states of the heart that you can cultivate. And through this lens of Buddhism and Buddhist psychology, compassion is a very high aspiration. It's one of the kind of overriding aspirations, and that is cultivating a state of mind of wanting others to be free from suffering. Certainly for yourself to be free from suffering, but also to wish that for others. It's not just empathy. It's not just feeling what other people feel. It's the empathic altruism. It's the call to action to really help to alleviate suffering. And it really draws on the two wings of the practice. The wing of seeing clearly, which is wisdom, and the wing of how you be with it, which is compassion. So these four states of the heart, as I mentioned last week, are described as immeasurable states, that when you really deeply experience these states, they have no limit. You cannot find an outer edge. And these are of loving kindness, of compassion, of joy and sympathetic joy, the capacity to feel joy for others as well. And equanimity, a steadiness of presence. And as you develop these states, part of the classic instructions are that you lodge yourself in this state and then you offer it out in all directions so that you and the whole universe is imbued with this quality. That's kind of where the practice kind of takes us. We'll explore that a little more. So what I'd like to talk about is a little on the meaning and the roots of these heart practices. And as in any practice, there are pitfalls. There are challenges that show up when you actively are pursuing and engaging into these states. And to explore what it means to start with yourself, the practice of self-compassion, which can be very challenging, and the practice of offering it out to others. So it's really important to understand what compassion and love are all about, and how quickly we react to life, and in our reaction we create our world, we create our experience. one of the classic teaching stories from the Zen tradition is the samurai goes to a wise monk and he says to the monk, tell me what heaven and hell are. Explain to me what heaven and hell are. And the monk looks up at him and says, you couldn't begin to understand this. You're just a moronic brute. How could you possibly begin to understand the nuance of these teachings when you're obviously an idiot? And the samurai, he rears up, he pulls out his sword, he goes, I could cut you in two. And the monk says, that's hell. And the samurai sees that beautiful teaching and the risk the monk took to offer that insight, and he just falls to his knees and thanks him. And the monk says, that's heaven. Maybe you've noticed how something can show up out of the blue in your life and it just spins you off into reactivity. And of course, an unmindful life is simply reacting to everything. You know, it's just like being a pinball in a pinball machine. You're bouncing from one thing to the next. There's no gap between stimulus and response. Something happens, you react. Something happens, you react. What mindfulness or non-judging awareness does is it just opens up that gap a little bit where you can sometimes recognize you have a choice. You can be aware of your reactivity. You can be aware of the inherent suffering and being caught in your reactivity. And new options may show up. So compassion is the wish for another being to be free from suffering, as well as yourself. Love is wanting happiness for the other being. There's a little difference between the two. And I'd say it's safe to say that when you really begin to practice non-judging awareness or mindfulness, you start to see more and more into your conditioning. You begin to see into all those reactive patterns and how they shaped you, how your character structure is formed by your primary caretakers, by your family, by your birth order, by the school you went to, by the culture you're living in. All of that shapes who you are. And when you begin to practice compassion, a really deep and sincere desire to be free from suffering, and to sensitize yourself to that wish for others, that movement from reactivity and self-protection to compassion and empathy is dramatic. And now, of course, we're studying this and we're doing experiments to see if we can qualify and quantify what happens when you do these practices. And the benefits are amazing. Again, like I say of mindfulness, if it was a drug, it'd be considered the miracle drug of this era. So some of the benefits of an active compassion practice: less anxiety and depression, a greater protection against self-criticism and negative affect, a capacity to know when you're suffering, but to be able to turn toward yourself with kindness, a greater wisdom and emotional intelligence because of your capacity to sense what other people feel. People who have more compassion ruminate less and suppress thoughts less. There's more of an allowing quality. An increased capacity and clarity around feelings. And this is an interesting one. An increase in motivation versus self-indulgence. So you actually, the motivation comes from more of a genuine place inside. Less fear of failure, more motivation to achieve rather than from social standing, but from more intrinsic qualities. People who practice compassion, turns out, are healthier they tend to be more self-disciplined and tend to be less caught in self-criticism and negative behavior, happier in relationships, and more aware and responsive to the needs of others. So that's a pretty awesome list. I'd sign up for that medication if it was available. And again, it's about attention training. And it really comes into a very interesting question. Can you actually influence your mind? Can you actually change your conditioning? And again, last week we talked about this basic rule of where the attention goes, the energy flows. And when you can train your attention on compassion, things move in that direction. And it's a very interesting element that as you really come to understand that suffering in life is inevitable, it happens, and you embrace that fact and you begin to respond to suffering with compassion, as you become more aware of the suffering around you, your own suffering becomes more manageable. So the interesting thing is when we're under stress, of course, we all go into self-protection. You know, we go into the clench and we get tight and we get small and we get self-protective. And part of this practice is to start with yourself, which is a very, very challenging place to start. And of course, as I like to say, maybe ad nauseum, when you focus on being present, moment to moment present in your life, you will notice how you're not present. And you'll notice all the patterns of how you're not present. You'll notice all of your conditioning of how you're not present. In that same way, when you focus on compassion, you're going to notice how you're not compassionate. You're going to notice all of your conditioning that sort of trained you out of being compassionate for all the reasons that have shaped your character and your character structure. So I'd like to talk a little bit about some of the pitfalls and challenges. I heard this comedian once who said that when he was a kid, he had a very strict curfew. He wasn't allowed to come home until it was dark. I grew up somewhat in that era, you know, where I was basically told, you know, dinner's at 6. There weren't any questions about where I was going or what I was doing. And of course, that's not so true now. You know, there's the helicopter parenting and the hovering parents, the micromanaging. Were my parents in their loose leash compassionate? I think they were. Maybe a little bordering on benign neglect. But are the parents who are hovering, are they compassionate? Well, you could say yes. But maybe with a little too much tight control, who knows? There's a few things that can show up when you practice compassion. They're often referred to as near enemies. And one of them can be self-indulgence, where you can say, I'm just going to be compassionate toward myself today, so I'm just going to eat sugar and sleep. Is that truly compassionate? It might look that way, but not really. It's kind of like, again, like with a mother with a child, you know, that fine line between you want your child to do their homework and get their homework in time, but you also want them to have a fun life. So you want to kind of find that balance. And it takes incredible wisdom to find that balance between right effort and rest. It's very easy to kind of fall off that a little bit. That self-awareness is really, really powerful. Just as an aside, as a bona fide geek, because I'm always looking for biohacking and all that stuff, I listened to an interview with the guy who created something called the Aura Ring, which I'm wearing, which is a sensor. It senses your heart rate variability, and it's the it's one of the best sleep trackers. And I've been reading a lot on sleep and what happens when you don't get sleep, and this terrifying stuff. Get your sleep. It has this algorithm that rates my sleep and how much I exercise the day before, and then it gives me a readiness score in the morning. Like, here's how ready you should be for exercise. And I'll tell you, it is freaky. Like, this morning, the day before, it was like 79 out of 100. And I realized that's exactly how I felt. I felt like a 79 out of 100. So part of compassion is around that deep listening to what is needed to relieve suffering. And we can easily slide off to think, well, I'm not going to push myself because I want to be compassionate. Or I'm going to make myself work hard because I want those goals, and that's compassionate. So tricky business. Another element, when you really begin to turn your attention to compassion, of course, when you open yourself to compassion, you are also opening yourself to empathy, which means your capacity to feel what other people are feeling. And that can be exhausting. I've talked before about empathy fatigue. And there's actually a difference between empathy fatigue and compassion fatigue. Empathy fatigue is where you're taking on everyone's feelings around you. And of course, as you know, you can't do that for too long or you'll get utterly depleted. And there are obviously many, many people out there would be more than happy to tell you how they feel. But what happens is when you have empathy fatigue, you can't take in anymore. You actually find yourself shutting down. That's why, as I've shared, when you get the fundraising letters, they don't show you the whole village of starving children. They'll show you one or two. Because one or two is going to touch your heart. A whole village is going to overwhelm you, and you're just going to throw the letter away. I had a conversation this morning with my wife, who's made this very cool distinction of how there is empathy fatigue. That is to say, you can get overwhelmed with what other people feel and their suffering. But compassion is very different. Because empathy doesn't have mindfulness. You're simply feeling what another person feels. And of course, you can get sucked into their world. You get sucked into their drama. But compassion actually has mindfulness. And mindfulness has an activated prefrontal cortex. And the prefrontal cortex is that part of you that sees the big picture. So you can actually sense someone's suffering. And you can hold it in a larger framework where you can see someone's suffering and you can see the lessons that they have to learn. You can sense someone's suffering and you can hold it in a larger place in your heart. Another pitfall of compassion, as you begin to open yourself to the suffering of those around you, is it can lead to the pitfall of pity. And pity is sometimes looks like compassion and kindness, but it's not. It's a separation. You're actually holding yourself separate from the other when you pity another. So one of the hardest places to start is learning how to train yourself to offer compassion toward yourself, to acknowledge the suffering that you are holding in any given moment and to hold that in your heart. And the truth is, you can't always be the person you want to be. You know, when you also find, as the Rolling Stones put it so well, you can't always get what you want. And it becomes a question of how can you hold yourself with that quality of compassion. Someone who I was sharing with was struggling in a relationship. All seemed to be going well on some level, but underneath it, there was just this tightness and kind of a really deep clench, kind of an insecurity about how this relationship was unfolding. It was still pretty new. And he couldn't understand why everything seemed to be going so well, and yet he had this deep-seated anxiety underneath. And so we kind of explored, and part of it is to just kind of drop the story and begin to explore where it lives on the inside, how his nervous system was kind of holding all of this. And as he began to just to sort of make room for this tightness, this clench, this anxiety, the nervousness, the restlessness, the fear, all of this, he was exploring how despite how everything looked, this churning he had inside. And so I had asked him at one point, I said, well, how old is that feeling? And then suddenly he just had this kind of full recall of how he was the firstborn, kind of the love of his mother's life, followed by four more children. And suddenly there wasn't enough attention. And he realized that every relationship he had been in was informed by this very, very deep-seated anxiety, just a nervousness around the steadiness or the reliability of this relationship. Seeing it was one thing, just seeing that pattern. But then the challenge was, could he really hold that with compassion? And so he just took some time. As Thich Nhat Hanh says so beautifully, that when you get in contact with your own suffering, simply to say, I care about the suffering. Just letting it know you see it, letting you know it care, you care, created a really helpful shift for him. That example brings up a really interesting paradox in practice. As I've had the opportunity to be with people who have a committed practice and really stay with it. And the paradox is as you get more and more clear as to what's between you and feeling happy and between you and feeling free, and you learn the strategies of really seeing the conditioning, and you learn the strategies of bringing kindness and empathy and compassion to it, you're unwinding all of this conditioning. And on the one hand, you're strengthening this witness. You're strengthening mindfulness. You can see more and more and more through this lens of non-judging awareness. It's an extraordinary thing. And so as you become more aware of your conditioning and you kind of unpeel the onion, the paradox is what you begin to get more and more in touch with is the conditioning is kind of pre-verbal. It's the deep, really deep-seated stuff that paradoxically becomes harder to really get in touch with. Just something to be aware of in your practice, that quite often there's sort of the low-hanging fruit of like, oh, I can't believe I was believing that and feel that freedom, or you let go of something. But sometimes there are things you contact that just have very, very deep roots, as this person had, that early, early conditioning. So I'd like to offer a short reflection. This parallels a little bit of what we explored last week. One of the ways to begin to sensitize to this experience of compassion, of seeing suffering and caring for that suffering, is to reflect on a time when you were the recipient. So you might, with your eyes closed, just take a few slow, deep breaths. And just take a few moments to think of a time in your life when you were the recipient of someone who offered you some compassion, who sensed your suffering and acted toward that. And when you have a memory in mind, you might deepen your breath a little bit and sense if you can notice where you feel that as you just stream attention toward an act of compassion toward you. Can you locate where you feel that inside? And now you might bring into mind a moment recently when you may have experienced some suffering, some stress, or a sense of dissatisfaction, anxiety. And again, take a few moments to let yourself settle on just a recent experience you had. And you might sense, what is it like just to say hello to this? Some phrases you might offer. And this is a moment of suffering. Suffering is a part of life. I care about this suffering. May I give myself the compassion I need right now. And take a few moments to just to sense anything that may shift on the inside. This act of seeing the suffering and letting it know you care. You might now gently deepen and lengthen your breath. And if you like, you can open your eyes or you can remain with them closed. When you have a deep-seated intention to be free and to be happy, it's guaranteed that intention will bring very, very clearly what isn't happy and what isn't free. That's the nature of the practice. And this practice can be brutal. And it's a little bit of a cliche, but I think it's really accurate that this practice is really a process of reparenting, or as Tara says, spiritual parenting. Because just as you can have a parent who's overindulgent, or you can have a parent who's lived from benign neglect, or a parent who is just a ruthless critic, we have those qualities embedded in us. As Garrison Keillor famously said, he wrote his parents when he was in college, and he said, "Dear Mom and Dad, I want you to know that from now on, you no longer have to criticize me. I've recognized now that I've completely internalized your voices." So the question really is that when you when this practice reveals something that feels raw, feels tender, that unknown, that unsafe space, it is very much a practice of reparenting. I've shared this before, but I'll share it again because I think it's helpful. Recently, in a conversation with Jack Kornfield, he was saying how, talking about this very practice of how, that when you encounter the really, really hard stuff, and when you have the firepower to really investigate it, like really see it clearly and trace it back, quite often what you will trace back will be a very, very young place inside. Like a young child in all of their rawness. And he said, I don't know of any more profound practice than taking that child and just holding that child on your lap. That's very much what these heart practices can do. So what these teachings say is that as you develop your capacity to be with your own stress and dissatisfaction and unsteadiness and suffering, you can build your resilience to be with those around you. And that becomes a critical part of the training, is to widen your tolerance, widen the affect tolerance of suffering around you. When I lived in an ashram for a couple decades, one of my practices for almost 7 years was being celibate, a poverty vow and a celibacy vow. And when you're in your 20s and 30s practicing celibacy, it's a challenge, especially when you're doing lots of yoga and you're really healthy and all that stuff. So one of the teachings from my teacher's teacher was to see others either as parents or siblings. And that was a really critical part of my practice, to see others either as a parent or a sibling. And I had a very powerful way of kind of diffusing the, you know, kind of the wanting, craving mind. And that's very much taking on that view of looking for the good in others. There's a story I heard from someone, a practitioner who's driving her car home from work. And just before she got home, her car broke down on a really, really busy street, and she pulled over into a bike lane. And like immediately, cars started honking, bikers were yelling at her, you know, shaking their fist at her, and she was just freaked out. And she was trying to wave people around and was completely self-conscious and called AAA, and AAA said, we'll be there in 45 minutes. And she just sat in the car, completely lost in self-criticism. You know, you idiot, you should have been paying attention, you didn't notice that the car needed some kind of work, how could you have done this, on and on and on again. And then she heard a tapping on the window. And she looked over. She thought, oh, here's someone who's going to yell at me. And this guy said, can I get you a cup of tea? And she had pulled over right in front of a coffee shop. And she's like, what? He said, yeah, I'm so sorry this has happened to you. Well, can I get you a cup of tea? And she was like, yeah. She said, I can get you coffee, whatever you want. You want a cappuccino? She said, no, chamomile tea would be great. And so then this guy disappeared, and then the self-criticism continued. And then he came back, wrapped on a glass, and he gave her tea, and then he left. And then he came back later, and he said, I'm sorry, are you allergic to honey? And she's like, no, I'm not. He goes, oh, good, I'm so relieved because I put honey in your tea. And then she said, I can't tell you how nice this is. It was so kind. He said, this has happened to everyone. Don't worry about it. And then she just sat and she cried, and she realized how she was so lost in this self-recrimination, this negative self-talk, and that what broke her out of it was this act of compassion and a recognition is like her car broke down. That's all that happened. It does happen to everyone. So there are ways to, some classical ways that you can practice. And one way to think of it is like, what is it that's going to get you access to this inner state? And one of the great ways to start is by reflecting on someone who you know is suffering and to wish them well. And that kind of activates you, kind of like turns on the pilot light, if you will. Another way then to shift is to a benefactor, to someone who you know wishes you well, someone who's on your team. And it's relatively easy to wish them well in their suffering. And then to turn to self, and then to a neutral person. And then, if you like, you can throw in a difficult person to wish them well. And then out to all beings. A couple of quick things before we do a final meditation. There's something called premature transcendence or spiritual bypass, where you want to rush to the conclusion. You know, so yeah, that person was really harmful to me. Oh, well, I'll just forgive them. It's really, really okay, without really doing the work. In that same way, when you are exploring any way you've been wronged, any trauma that you have felt, unless you really stop to give yourself compassion, that is to say, unless you really pause to acknowledge the suffering you're feeling, you can't offer the other person compassion. It subverts the whole process. So it's very much around taking it slow in this practice and really engaging into the experience, the felt sense of how the heart responds. I think it's been described as the quivering of the heart in response to suffering. That's kind of what you're looking for. So we're going to close our evening with about a 5-minute meditation. So if you'd like, you can close your eyes, and I'll offer a little bit of guidance, but also some space for you to do your own investigation. And as you slow down your breath just a little bit, just sensing how this experience of compassion is both a state that is immeasurable, but also a practice that can be cathartic. You might bring into mind someone in your life right now who is experiencing some form of suffering. And suffering can be described as stress, anxiety, dissatisfaction, unsteadiness. And as you bring this person into mind, just to sense your heart's response. You might offer some of the following phrases, or ideally any phrases that work well for you, or just a sense of well-wishing. I care about your suffering. May you be well. May you feel safe from inner and outer harm. May you feel happy. And may you meet your suffering with wisdom and a wise heart. You might bring into mind someone who you easily and naturally feel positive feelings toward. Take a moment to wish them well. May you feel peace. May you feel ease. Take a moment to sense this breath, to sense your life journey. And take this time to wish you well. Wish yourself well. May I be filled with an ease of well-being. May I feel safe from inner and outer harm. And sensing this response to the suffering around you in this world. And you might imagine the space in front of you filled with a sense of compassion and care. And can you imagine the space behind you filled with compassion and care? Can you imagine the space to the left and right of you, filled with a sense of compassion and care? And the space above you, the space below you. And is it possible to imagine the space inside your body and the space outside your body filled and suffused with a sense of compassion and care? May all beings everywhere, without exception, be happy and be filled with ease and be free from suffering. And as you might sense the limitlessness of this state, you might close by again offering yourself well. In these final moments, you might sense in this week ahead, is there someone or something you might include in your daily practice to take a few moments to hold them with compassion, perhaps yourself or another? And And as you're ready, you can deepen your breath and when you're ready, you can open your eyes. Thank you for your time and attention. May you have a compassion-filled evening and beyond. And next week, we're going to talk about joy, which is a really fun one. Enjoy your evening. Thanks for coming out.